Life isn't about avoiding the bruises. It's about collecting the scars to prove that we showed up for it. Join Nikki Seberini for the next hour as she explores heroism through illness. There is a warrior inside each of us. This is LifeLinks with the DL Link. LifeLinks is a funding initiative of the DL Link.
Well, welcome to the show, the DL Link show on 101.9 Chai FM, the show where we connect you through insights, information, and illumination. So how are you doing on this Thursday as we celebrate 77 years of Israel's independence, Yom HaTzma'ot, and so many celebrations happening in Israel. Also, we know about these awful fires. So we move through the challenges and we celebrate what is, and that is, as I said, 77 years of independence. Of course, in South Africa, we are celebrating Workers' Day, and it really is just a day that commemorates the struggles and gains of workers and labor movement. And it also acknowledges the sacrifice made in the fight for fair employment standards against apartheid. And we certainly do have very, very fair labor laws in South Africa. Probably can compete with many countries around the world. So we have a fabulous show lined up for you. I hope you're going to be staying for the entire show. I'm going to be speaking to a cancer warrior, but not the kind that we have who shares their cancer journey, but really a warrior slash activist, a real powerhouse making changes in South Africa when it comes to cancer, when it comes to the government, when it comes to a whole lot of things. Salome Mayo, who's the CEO of Cancer Alliance, is joining us today. And we're just going to find out what she's up to. Last year, she joined us in May last year. We were talking about people taking to the streets because of the millions of unspent rands that had been allocated for cancer treatment and the signing of in the NHI bill, all of that. So we really are delighted that Salome is joining us again. And then Josie Mackink will be joining us. She's a specialist wellness counselor at ASCHP, and Josie offers amazing free meditation and breathwork support groups. So if you want to hear more about that, keep listening. But for now, our first guest, Salome Mayo, CEO of the Cancer Alliance. Salome, welcome back. Lovely to have you back on the show.
Good morning to you, Nikki, and to all your listeners on this Workers' Day.
Yes, on a Workers' Day. And you know, Salome, I was reading your background and I just pretty overwhelmed and filled with admiration with the work that you do. You really have dedicated your life to cancer and bringing cancer to the foreground, to, you know, looking at bringing all of these different cancer associations and whatever together and forming this Cancer Alliance, but also research and everything that you've done in the past and being a part of the Cancer Association. And it all started many years ago because a friend of yours, you lost a friend to breast cancer. Perhaps just as a quick background, because it's always so interesting to see what motivates people to do the things that they do.
Yes, indeed. My best friend, mentor, and colleague, and we were both at the time climbing the corporate ladder in government service. She was diagnosed with breast cancer at a very early age of 35. And at 37, she passed away, leaving behind a 2.5-year-old child. Mm-hmm. And I was faced, and it was literally about 3 months after she passed away, I mentioned her name, and the person said to me, "Who are you talking about?" And I was shocked to the core that the work that we've done 3 months later, nobody actually kind of like remembers the person. And then did a lot of introspection in terms of my own life and where I'm going, and actually realized that there is a system in terms of cancer care access. And it was only in later years that obviously the concept of equitable Cancer Care Access came into my mind. But it was in 1996, indeed, that I made the commitment to leave formal employment and to start working as a volunteer in cancer care. And I first became an advisor to the Cancer Association and was associated with them until 2006. Then became an independent advocate because I also indicated that I've got my own voice and that I have got a lot to contribute, and was instrumental in the establishment of the Cancer Alliance, which today is an umbrella body that is advocating for equitable and timely cancer care access. And we've got 33 organizations as part of us. And then I became the activist. And that was particularly because of the fact that you've got to take your gloves off at some point. And that's my journey.
Amazing. I love it. I love this, you know, I mean, what you're sharing seems like a seamless flow, but I'm sure for you it was anything but, and there were many bumps along the way and many learning. I know certainly with CARISA, the Cancer Research Initiative of South Africa, you started it, and that's when you continued with the advocacy then. I know that after you left, 18 months later, it closed, but then, you know, was the birth of the Cancer Alliance. So interesting, moving from cancer advocate to activist. And maybe you can just give our listeners a better understanding of what that looks like.
So yes, in terms of CARISA, it actually only closed down 5 years later. I think it's quite important to actually mention that, you know, in 2008, I don't think the environment was that ready for the collaborative work that is now called for. And I, in fact, attended a research meeting just 2 weeks ago and was so absolutely thrilled that now, 15 years later, we are in fact ready for that collaboration and inclusive work. With regards to becoming the activist, that was very much when we started working with the Treatment Action Campaign, Section 27, with regards to the patent law, and where you could actually start seeing the impact of other health issues on cancer. And that's when I became the activist. So it's been... You know, it's not always the easiest to transform from the advocate or to be that advocate, you know, still, which means that you have to recognize the role that other stakeholders play. But yes, as an activist, you also have a very particular role in terms of holding government accountable. And that is also why the recent court case and the judgment is such a landmark judgment for us, because now the judge Nieuwenhuizen have actually confirmed that the role of civil society is to keep government accountable, and that is very important for us to make sure that the ordinary citizen out there understand the role of civil society and understand that when we come to the person in the street who has been affected by whatever the situation is, and we say to you, stand up and speak up, that we need your voice. People like us, we need you to join us and to join the forces to hold government accountable.
I mean, you talk about 2008 going back, and that, you know, it just wasn't the right time, the certainly the right space for this kind of collaborative work. 15 years later, it's there. And I mean, the civil society and the importance of the support, and for you to be able to do the work that you do, as you say, make government accountable. What do you say to people, though, who feel let down by the government, who feel let down by the system? You know, we talk about all of that money sitting there, or people, so many people waiting for cancer treatments, the cancer metastasizing, people passing because they didn't have the treatment, and probably they feel, as I said, disillusioned, let down. How do you galvanize a civil society that is feeling like they've been kind of left behind?
I think that is one of the most difficult things that we still have to achieve, and I say that as the Cancer Alliance and the cancer community. If we look at what the Treatment Action Campaign and all the HIV activists have actually managed to do 20 years ago, that was galvanizing themselves as a one voice. What we still have to do in this country is to actually get all the cancer survivors as well as their families together as one voice. But you know, I always remind people and I say that when you have been diagnosed with cancer, it really is as if the carpet has been pulled from underneath your whole world. And undergoing cancer treatment is not easy. And it is very difficult for most people. And therefore, you really don't feel like becoming that person to stand up and voice your concerns, because you actually just want to be climb into bed and just cover yourself and protect yourself. Mm-hmm. So that is the switch, in a way, that we have to make by saying to our cancer survivors and people out there, we don't expect of you to come and toy with us, but what we do expect of you is to actually support us in the many ways that you can. And, you know, with social media today, that is one of the active ways in which you can join campaigns, in which you can raise your voice. Also, and I think we need to highlight this, that HIV, AIDS, TB, over the years, have managed to get a lot of funding from globally, from various funds, you know, and obviously with the recent United States funding cuts that have affected many, many, many HIV people, organizations now being without funds. However, within the cancer community, it is one of the most difficult things for us to actually raise funds for advocacy and for the work that we do, because cancer is not recognized as a priority for corporate social investment. So that, in essence, is also one of the other things that we do say, that that's another way in which you can add your voice by actually supporting cancer organizations that do the work within cancer. And there's a big overlap between the HIV and the cancer organizations. As a result of our success with the ARV programs that we've had up until now, we have a lot of people that are successfully living with the HIV. However, because they are now living longer, but they still have a compromised immune system, they all have the opportunity to be diagnosed with cancers. So we do say that it is something that we would need to actually expand in terms of how we look at funding health, and not necessarily a disease specific.
Yeah, wow. And I hear you quite disappointing about the corporate social investment, that cancer isn't a priority, especially when you look at the numbers Certainly in South Africa, you know, the growing numbers. And also, I know with the Cancer Alliance, you spoke about there being, you know, this umbrella body and there being 33 organizations. And I was just thinking, so often, well, not so often, but I have survivors, cancer survivors, who after their journey begin some kind of a project. It starts off as a project, and then they start raising funds for something, and then they start supporting a particular group, whether it's children, whether it's breast cancer specifically, or whatever. And there's this whole movement, and you know, it's I mean, the DL Link show, you know, the DL Link, this incredible organization that supports people in such a, yeah, holding, supporting kind of family, guiding you and being with you along the journey. So what I'm alluding to is there's so many, you're looking at your 33 organizations, but there's so many more that people have started to give back. And how would that be possible? And do you think there would be a benefit, Salome, in bringing them on board?
Absolutely, Nikki. That is one of the things that we, the Cancer Alliance, would want to do, is to basically bring all those individual, smaller, whether they're community-based, whether they are in a specific province, whether they're serving a specific cancer, bring them on board as members of the Cancer Alliance. What we have achieved as the Cancer Alliance is that we have established ourselves as the recognized organization that advocates for equitable and timely cancer care access in this country with government. And when I say with government, we're talking about the Department of Health, as well as the Department of Science and Technology, and other departments that we work with. One of our main focus projects now is that we are advocating for the establishment of a national cancer institute in South Africa that can bring together the public and the private sector under one umbrella, and that such a body is accountable to Parliament in terms of where we are going with cancer in this country. Cancer is going to grow exponentially in the next 10 years. It is high time that government also makes sure that it becomes a priority together with the other NCDs that it has to focus on. So that in itself, and by bringing all the other organizations who are not yet part of us, you will be adding your voice to say, yes, let's work towards that, such a body that can bring together research, that can bring together clinical guidelines, treatment pathways, as well as making sure that we will have enough equipment as well as enough trained staff for treating cancer in this country in the future. And then the other project that we very, very specifically are focusing on is the elimination of cervical cancer. Cervical cancer is the cancer that can be prevented. And in South Africa, we have got a very high incidence of women that die of cervical cancer, and then it is late stage disease. So apart from the fact that we do already have the HPV vaccine, which is now being provided to girls in public as well as in private schools, and that we have switched over to the one dose regime, we now have to make sure that women in our communities understand that they should be screened at an early stage already for early stage cancers, and that it is a very treatable disease and it should not spread. And a lot of our focus is now going into making sure that our community health workers, traditional health practitioners, that we build the capacity of these I want to say foot soldiers in our communities. We also would like to start working with our faith-based community to actually spread the word on how we can increase the awareness and education of women and men with regards to cervical cancer elimination. We can achieve that in South Africa.
I remember a few years ago, I think it was, I spoke to someone. We were talking about cervical cancer and the HPV vaccine, how it had been introduced in Australia. And please correct me if I am wrong, Salome, if you know, if you're aware of this. And it became a vaccine that was compulsory. And apparently within a couple of years, I don't know if it was 2 years, the rate of cervical cancer dropped so dramatically. And exactly as you say, they, you know, their idea is eliminating cervical cancer completely. So you look to Australia and there is the success story. But we're a different country and we have, you know, so many more challenges within the private health and within public health and what's available and in terms of funding and budgets. So when you talk about rolling it out, is there budget for that? I mean, is this HPV vaccine available to all these young, for all of these young people?
So indeed, in South Africa, yes, we do have the HPV vaccination program. And that was established already in 2014. It is, money is made available directly to the Department of Health from Treasury as a conditional grant. And they then fund the provinces who work in collaboration with the Department of Basic Education for the rollout of the vaccination program. Before COVID, we actually had a very, very good vaccination rate of 80% plus. Obviously, after COVID, you know, with COVID, that affected the program implementation. But as I indicated, we have now moved over to the one dose. And with the one dose, meaning it's one, previously it was two doses that had to be administered. But with the one dose administering now, that policy, government is able to then to open that up to the public schools, to private schools that previously have not been included. And there's also a catch-up program as part of that funding, because obviously switching from two doses to one dose, you have a savings, and that is available. So we are very fortunate in South Africa, and we should congratulate Treasury, as well as the Department of Health, as well as the Department of Basic Education, with the provincial health departments for rolling out this vaccination program in as a school-based program. There are other countries that are not as fortunate to roll it out as a school-based program. You are 100% correct with referring to Australia in terms of what they have achieved. Obviously, the problem is also still with the indigenous population in terms of the reach and also the territories, the reach of how they reach those women and girls. And also, Australia is set to be the first country that will eliminate cervical cancer with their dedicated elimination strategy. And that is where South Africa is still falling short, because our screening rate, so the WHO is calling for 70% of women screened in their lifetime with a high quality HPV DNA test. And we are not even close to with our normal pap smear, we're not even close to 50%. So that's where we're falling short. And then 90% of women that are diagnosed with cancerous lesions, that those cancerous lesions, 90% of those women are treated. Again, we're falling short severely on that. So South Africa still has a lot of work that we have to do in terms of catching up. And the focus point at this stage of the game should be on women coming forward for the cervical cancer screening with that HPV testing. I can also say that in the public sector, we're moving towards HPV DNA testing in most of the provinces. And the next exciting step, I think, for the country to move forward to is self-testing, so that women can do their own test, coupled then with HPV DNA testing. That wow. in itself is going to be an absolute game changer. If you just think of it, how invasive pap smears are, that women can, in fact, in future, do their own self-test. And I can say that in many African countries, they are already rolling this out. Obviously, in South Africa, we have to couple that with the readiness of the public sector in order to deal with the demand in terms of the service. And if women then are screened positively with a precancerous lesion.
I have to say, Salome, that that all sounds, first of all, very exciting about the focus, what's available, the changes, and as you say, support from government, which is great, and the starting of a National Cancer Institute. So I'm delighted that you're not thinking of retiring anytime soon, because you are needed in this field and being this great cancer activist. And just looking forward to many more conversations in the future and keeping up to date. We appreciate all the work that you're doing, your passion and your commitment to it. We really, really do. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Nikki. And if there is anybody that wants to connect with us, you can find us at canceralliance.org.za on the internet. You can connect with us, or you can connect directly with me, and I would be more than willing to guide you in how you can become involved. Thank you all very much for always highlighting the work that we do.
You're more than welcome. Thank you, Salome. Take care. Salome Mayer, CEO of Cancer Alliance. Very, very exciting.